Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And we are going to be rescheduling our guest that we had booked for today, The Art of Negotiating, because we are going to find that that is something that's going to work out for the best. So today it's going to be an open mic day. Telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Donna Sebo here, and I wanted to share a story with you that I think is going to, start your day off maybe in a very, very good way. So many people are dealing with issues today that are requiring a different attitude, a different understanding about how to approach the job market. Every generation has these challenges to one degree or another, especially when you have disruptive technologies that cause industries perhaps to disappear, go away. Well, this is something that relates to, it's a story that relates to a man by the name of Daniel Webster. Now, I'm sure you've heard of his name, but Daniel Webster was just beginning his career as a lawyer, and he took a case that he charged a whopping $20 for. Well, you have to remember, this was a few years ago. So $20, well, it was still a significant sum in his time. And the case ended up being really a tough one. It was a very difficult case for Daniel. And it was something that took a heck of a lot more time than what he expected. And more than that, he ended up having to travel to a large city, which the travel expenses alone were going to cost him a heck of a lot more money than what he was even going to make on the case. Now, he was very determined. Even though he found out what had happened and what went on, when he found out what occurred and what was going to need to be done, he just took it in stride. He said, well, I'll just have to cover those expenses myself. And he determined that this case, he was going to do the best he possibly could. And in having that attitude, it ended up changing his life in a very dramatic way. It was a small case. It wasn't something that was really dynamic. But it was his commitment to giving the best. There were no newspaper headlines, nothing that was going to make this case a wow in the minds of anyone. No, it was a little case. Now, a number of years later, because this was his attitude about anything that he did, there was a very large company that approached Daniel and wanted him to do a case, and they were willing to pay quite a substantial fee for this. In fact, in his time, it was a lot more than he ever thought possible. Now, when he went through the case, reviewing all the details, he found that this case was almost identical to the one he had researched and won nearly 20 years before, where he had paid only $20. So what did he do? He took the case, and just as before, the verdict was in favor of his client. Now, what's the point here? The point is that many times we may do something that gains experience. Our standards, our ethics, our positioning as an individual can make a great deal of difference in the result that comes about. We may not get accolades, but we have done something to the best of our capacity. And just like Daniel did it, and he continued to go forth in his various levels of responsibilities through the years, gaining a very good reputation. Little did he realize that the standards, the research he had done, everything that he had gone through before, was going to come full circle 20 years later, bringing a result that would handsomely reward him for what he had done and actually had lost money on big time so many years before. Life has a way of coming full circle, and sometimes we do not realize, we haven't a clue at how significant that is. It's very, very important that we take the time, that we do what we need to do, so that whatever we are in the moment, it's an example of mindfulness. Whatever we are doing in a moment, whether it's baking a pumpkin pie or winning a huge law case or doing something else, it's what we do in the moment. What is the best we're going to give? That is going to have the result that discipline, training, focus, concentration, all of those wonderful, wonderful terms. And you may utilize that at a later date. Someone once said, we need to be great in the little things. And boy, that's right on the money. Absolutely true. So whatever you do, don't give up. Always give your best in whatever situation you're in. You never know that experience that you're going through, what you are doing, how you are going to have that impact and that momentum of benefit at a later date. So very, very important. Be great in the little things. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open today, 888-627-6008. And we are going to rebook my guest, Tali, on his book, The Art of Negotiating. So we're going to be doing that in the next few days. So that is going to work very, very well. I wanted to bring out some information today regarding medicines. There's a lot of concern in today's world by people who are mindful. And again, I'm using that word with a great deal of attention this morning. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes I get so engrossed in things that I may not take care of certain things that I should. And how often do we get distracted? Oh, that happens to me. So this is one of the points of information that I wanted to share with you. Diuretics. Now, diuretics are something that many people are familiar with. Anyone that has a loved one that has heart issues, diuretics are often prescribed because if someone has kidney or liver dysfunctioning, especially the kidney, the diuretics are meant to assist those organs that are not doing the job of, let's say, blood flow, as well as releasing fluids out of the body. And for those of you that have had people that in your family or have friends, you'll have them, they'll just bloat up like balloons, and that's because there's so much fluid being retained by the body that the organs need assistance. And diuretics are one of those tools. And it especially helps the kidneys not only produce the urine process, but also to get rid of it. And edema is a very common term. And diuretics, again, are meant to assist. Now, what it does also, it affects the excretion of electrolytes by the kidneys. And we've all heard about electrolytes. How many of us hear about sports drinks and the electrolytes that are in them? Now, what makes up electrolytes? Well, some of the substance in there is sodium and potassium salts. Now, an electrolyte is a chemical that when it's dissolved in a particular solvent, whatever that might be, it conducts an electrical current. That's why it's called an electrolyte. So the salts, plural, they are deeply involved with your blood pressure, nerve impulse transmission, and also the contraction of your muscles. That's why when you see football players, basketball players, anybody in intense activity, swimmers, bikers, very important that those electrolytes are included into their activities. And that's why there's so many drinks to promote that. However, a diuretic increases the secretion and elimination of urine from your body. And in ancient traditions with herbal medicine, diuretic was applied more broadly to herbs that have a beneficial action on the urinary system. I know I heard a cardiologist say that one of his patients used celery seed to be able to assist the kidneys to work more effectively because he didn't want to take the medicine. So there's all kinds of things when people are going through certain experiences. And diuretics, there's a number of different types. And there are herbs that can be used as diuretics. They will increase the kidney blood flow, and they'll also reduce water reabsorption in the nephrons of the kidneys. So there's all kinds of things that we can take. A lot of people will drink tea that works as it. Coffee can also have an effect. And there are so many different herbs, and I'll just mention a couple of them. Celery seed, I mentioned to you. Yarrow is one. Agrimony is another. Buchu is another. Kola. But there are areas of research that one needs to get into. And the reason I brought it up is that there has been some conversations that I've had lately with people who found if they took diuretics, it had an adverse effect on them. So they were looking for something that maybe could be substituted. And there is a wonderful, wonderful book that if anyone really wants to do research, it's like a textbook. It's just huge. It's called Medical Herbalism, The Science and Practice of Herbal Medicine by David Hoffman. And it's a book, if you wanted to add it to your library, some people would say, yeah, go ahead and read it. It'll put you to sleep in 30 seconds. But the truth is there's so much good information in this book that if you wanted to research, you might find a copy of it at your local library. And if so, you might want to check it out. But if you're into using natural products as they are typically categorized, this is something where you can find out how the action of certain items like celery seed or your yarrow or your kola, just a hawthorn is another herb, how it can work on the body. And we have to remember our bodies are chemical systems, and these are systems that we're going to be able to really put into positioning in a very, very positive way. So we want to understand it. And it's always good to ask questions. I was reviewing material this morning relative to cancer, and I was quite surprised at the information that was put in it. And we're going to be doing an interview regarding this. And there is so much information that even medical doctors don't know. And I think as consumers, it's so important for us to be able to take a look at things and to be open to doing research, because you never know, it can really have a very big effect on your life. And when I mean a big effect on your life, you may find that, hey, you're able to do something for yourself that your doctor may not have been aware of. It's also important to know the chemical interactions too, because remember, most medicines, all medicines, have originally come from herbal information. So there's a lot out there. Anyway, I wanted to share that with you. We have an open line day today, 888-627-6008. The power of story has always been very, very much a part of the human experience. Many cultures that didn't have a written language shared stories through oral traditions. Parents taught their children through stories. We still do it today. It is something that will never, ever stop happening with the human experience. And Bruce Feiler said his dad one day talked to him and said, you know, our family is really falling apart. And he thought, what is my dad talking about? He doesn't, you know, what do you mean falling apart? Our family seemed to be pretty happy. What's the big deal? However, with technology, there has been more and more of a separation. On a trip to Alaska, this was last year, I had an experience of watching a family. It was a family of four that were sitting at an adjacent table in a restaurant. It was all women. There was an elderly woman there, and she had three younger members of the family that were sitting with her. Now, they obviously, in my view, and I could have been wrong in my assumption, had wanted to take Grandma out for breakfast. That's what they were doing. But what we noticed right away, my friend and I that always get together for breakfast when I'm up there in Anchorage, we noticed there was very little communication because the younger members of the family were on their cell phones and they were texting. And the grandmother was just eating very, very quietly. And my friend looked at me and she said, "It's really sad. What can we do?" Well, Bruce said his dad's words wouldn't leave him. Our family's falling apart. And he said, "What do we do? How do we take this and make it work? How can we take the situation that is emerging, the distancing, the less amount of communication? What do we do? How do we reverse it?" Well, Bruce said it was developing a strong family narrative. And he first heard of this concept, and it was in the mid-1990s, from a man by the name of Marshall Duke. Now, Marshall is a psychologist at Emory University. And Mr. Duke had been studying for quite a long time myth and ritual in American families. His wife, Sarah, was a learning disability specialist who works with children, and his wife made an observation about the people that she worked with. She said, "The students that I interact with who know a lot about their families seem to do a lot better when they have big challenges in front of them." Well, that grabbed her husband's attention. After all, he'd been in the classes studying myths and ritual, and in the American composite, did that really have an impact? So he had a colleague, his name is Robin, and they put together a survey called Do You Know? And they ask youngsters 20 different questions. And here are some of the questions. Do you know where your grandparents grew up? Do you know where your mom and dad went to high school? Do you know about illness or something really terrible that happened in your family? Now, they did this to four dozen families in 2001, and then they compared the children's answers with a lot of different psychological tests that children had taken, and they said, "Boy, Sarah's right. The more children know about their family's history, the stronger their sense of control is over their lives. Their self-esteem seems to be a lot better. And they seem to function better as families." And he said, "It's just absolutely amazing." Now, some of the research included families that were deeply affected by the 9/11 event. And then he asked the question, why is it? Knowing about where your grandmother went to school, how they lived, what their life was like, why did it make a difference? What did it do to create a resiliency within a youngster? And what they discovered was this. Children who have the most self-confidence have, and this is their word, an intergenerational self. They know they belong to something bigger than they are. They have a relationship with something that gives them an identity in a way. Now, they have found this in other aspects of research. With families, Bruce said they felt that it was very important that families understand that their standards are sort of like the mission statement with a corporation. You know, every company always says, this is our objective, this is our mission statement. And by golly, it works with families. Could be relating to integrity, courage, self-respect, the love of learning. It could be anything. But when families do that, they have a result. It's as if it becomes a core essence. And any family can set up what they want. This has worked very well in the military. It has been something, again, that's been utilized in major businesses. And it's important to understand history. It's important to know that who you are, you're part of a bigger picture than just being Jane, John, Mary, Joe. You're much bigger than that. That the family, where you live, your environment, all of this is part of what makes you as a person. And they said traditions, some simple traditions, can make all the difference in the world. And the most happy families communicate. You remember the show, The Waltons? Yes. That family had every kind of problem that would come up. They represent the Depression time here in the United States. And one of the reasons it was so endearing to millions of people, and still is even today, is because the family was always dealing with some kind of conflict. Money, relationships, kids growing up, going in different directions, different belief systems. And those messages are just as important today as they were in the portrayal of this period in the 1930s. Hardship is something that everybody's going to effectively go through in one way or another. So what he said, what Bruce said, if you really want a happier family, what you want to do is create, refine, and retell the story of your family's best moments and the ability that individuals had to bounce back from the difficult times. And I would add something to that. You should always include even those moments of failure. I think many times individuals, we like to romanticize them, glamorize them, without seeing maybe the downside of what they did. And it's important to understand, especially for children, that life isn't always going to be a fairy tale. In fact, if you really get into fairy tales, you'll find that most of them have some pretty horrific stuff in them. And the reason that fairy tales have always been so effective is that through the power of story, children are taught that sometimes unpleasant things happen, but it's what you do with them that makes a difference. As adults, we do the same thing. I was in a situation just a couple of days ago where someone was in a very deep state of anxiety and grieving. They were going through tremendous grieving. And I sat down with them, and we just had what I call a heart-to-heart chat. By the time we finished talking, and I was sharing my stories of failures as well as successes, this person realized that for all of what was seemingly out of control, that they had options to work with. And that somehow or another, it was going to work out, that they were going to have to make some shifts and changes. And I think that's what happens to us so many times. We need to be able to share our stories. And I can remember there was a time in my life where I wouldn't want to share my stories because I thought they were shameful. Years later, I realized a lot of other people had gone through the same kind of garbage I'd gone through, and there was no shame to share the story. I think it's very important because when we share our story, many times as we're telling our story, we can see the lessons that we've learned and the benefits that have come our way because of having the experiences we've had. It's so important. So my hat's off to Bruce. I think his story about families and stories is very, very important. Because isn't that what it's all about? Don't you really want to know somebody else's story? I know here on this show, we have heard well over 3,000 to 6,000 different types of stories told by different people, if not more. Maybe it's tens of thousands of stories that have been shared in actual reality on the Donna Sebo Show. And you never know how your story is going to touch someone else's life. It's very, very important that you have integrity with yourself and realize that your life has a very significant place in this experience that you're living. And it's because of you that someone, at some point in time, if it hasn't happened already, will benefit from what you've learned. And if you have family, be sure to include those stories to the children. Be sure to share them with the children, because they need to know that their life that they're going to be living is going to be their own. But they will have to choose how they're going to respond to certain things. And that's the gift, I think, that wise adults are going to pass along. They're not going to be afraid to tell the truth, share the ugly, along with the beautiful, because it's all part of the human experience. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment. When we come back, hey, if you'd like to chat with me, give me a call at 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Now, I do want to mention to those of you who are listening to me in the state of Washington, Western Washington especially, this Saturday, yes, it's coming about, the Emerald Spiral Expo. And we are going to be talking with Susan Harmon. And I'm going to ask Doug, if you will you bring in something for just a moment, because I neglected to give you a phone number. So my engineer, I hope he's listening. We are going to be talking with Susan Harmon in just a moment. I've got a fabulous story about the San Pedro mummy that I want to share with you, and we're going to be getting to that in just a bit. So, Doug, if you can hear me, if you will come back on, I would appreciate that. Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and as I told you, I started talking about the Emerald Spiral, and we needed to call Susan, and I digressed. So, Susan, welcome to the show.
Hey, always good to talk with you, Donna.
Susan, we have an event coming up here in Western Washington that is very special, and it's been around for a long time. And that is the Emerald Spiral Expo, that was known previously as the Boeing Psychic Fair for a lot of years. And this is just an incredible event that I've been involved with for so many years. And you yourself have became involved with it a few years ago, and it turned into the Emerald Spiral. But what is it that drives you with this event that just makes you so happy to put it on? I mean, this is just an incredible event that's happening at the Kit Commons.
Well, besides people like you, it offers an opportunity to the community at large to meet seriously. And I'm not saying this just as a promoter, but to meet the very best of the readers, the healers, and incredible merchandisers that come to this event to offer their services. We have wonderful speakers. We even have a snack bar. And I think what I like about it is the homey atmosphere that's been created. You know, we kept the Emerald Spiral kept the same floor plan that the Boeing Psychic Fair had for so many years because it gives more space and more room. We could cram a lot more people in, but we really want it to be welcoming to people so that they feel comfortable coming in. And we don't charge admission because we want people to explore and see what they can find, what fits for them.
Now, Susan, with this event, and as I've told my audience that I've been involved with it so many years, one of the aspects of this event is the multiple modalities that are shared in the talents and experiences of different people. And this is what I think is so significant about the Emerald Spiral Expo, your words it being homey. And again, this is in Western Washington, in Kent, Washington. And I think that when it comes to the paranormal, when it comes to various aspects of the healing environment, the level of professionalism on the part of many, many people and the artists that are there is really very, very positive. And what I think is good is that people can actually talk to the vendors. There are so many times environments where that's not encouraged. And that's one of the things about having the speakers, of which I'm going to be one at 2 o'clock on Saturday, but in having speakers that are saying, come along, let me share with you what I know. And again, this is all free to the people that come in. And it's sort of a safe environment, isn't it?
It's a very safe environment for everyone. And each person, each reader, each healer, they set their own fees. And there's several people who, you know, said, well, I'm thinking about doing a 30-minute reading for $20. I'm like, my goodness, that's a bargain, you know. But everyone sets their own rate so that you can go and see who feels right for you. You know, there's such a wide variety to choose from. And, of course, we have our coupon program with some of the vendors that if you get 3 coupons from different vendors, you get a free Emerald Spiral bag.
Now, Susan, I would like for you to share a little bit about yourself because one of your passions is working with various stones and crystals. And there are so many individuals that have such an interest in this. And, of course, there's a lot of publications on this. How did you find yourself drawn into this arena? I know the Native American culture has had an influence on you. But how did you find yourself knowing that this was a niche that you wanted to be involved with? Because I know you bring in some incredible stones, and they all have stories to them, which I think is fabulous.
Well, they call to me. I know it sounds a little odd to some people, but even as a child in Japan, we made little stone circles for the fairies when I was a child, and then moved to Arkansas in the 1950s, and the crystals were just laying on the ground then. And we used them to make these little circles for the fairies. And I've always been interested in stone since I was a child. And, you know, as you're aware, I keep a smile pile and trade the children a crystal for a smile because I want them to know they have value just as their smile. And the stones, they talk to me. And I listen to what they have to say. And I say that, you know, part of my job is schlepping these stones around to find their homes, you know, what humans they're supposed to be working with. There's a lot written, and I'm in the process of writing something to talk to people about using their intuition with stones instead of trying to just classify this particular kind of stone does this, that stone does that. That's not really how I operate. So I do it a little differently. In fact, I'm being interviewed this Friday by a Chinese television out of Beijing. They're flying over to Seattle. And they interviewed me last year in New Orleans at the United Astrology Conference, and they said that I was the only person that they felt really knew what she was talking about, which I think was very sweet of them. But I don't try to classify stones any more than I try to classify people. You meet each at their own level, and you honor that, wherever that is.
This is something that I feel has started to evolve in the area of intuition, in the area of psychic phenomena and the unknown, and also the developing of mind skills. I think we're finally reaching a point where instead of trying to box people in with labels, we're understanding that there's a lot more going on than
absolutely
the label itself, and that everyone will work differently. I have interviewed some extremely professional people. One is a lady, her name is Dorothy Kramer, and she is renowned for her healing skills, and she was born with the talent, but she's also a professional nurse. And she's funding an organization so that nurses could become acquainted with the other side of themselves, which she had always accepted, and that was the intuitive process, the healing process that goes along with it. And so when I have interviewed Dorothy, and she's been on my show more than once, the wisdom and the caring and the compassion that she has been able to bring into the medical field because of the acceptance and the learned understanding, and I use those two words thoughtfully, learned understanding, about how this can be incorporated into everyday medical situations, it has transformed the lives of thousands of people. And I like to think that that's what happens as, again, we become learned. Not textbook, but all together. We need to have the books. We need to have that. But also learning how to trust ourselves. And that's why this event at the Emerald Spiral, I think, is good. Because people can come in and talk to different individuals and just say, I don't know anything about what you do. Can you tell me about it? And people can discuss it with them. And they can walk away with a sense of feeling comfortable. Maybe curiosity is developed because of this conversation. And they say, I've had this experience and that experience. I wonder if I could relate to this. It's wonderful because it is a safe environment. It is an open environment. And the people that are there are really, I think, in many instances, business is business. But these people are very heart-centered. They really want others to know that this is something that can belong to all of them. And I think that this event is a very good one. Now, what are the hours? It's this Saturday.
Saturday. It's open to the public from 9 to 5. And don't forget, we have a snack bar, so you don't even have to leave to eat if you want. It's, you know, not a full restaurant, but there's food. Starts at 9. The speakers start at 9:15 and end at 4:45, the last speaker. So you're right. It's a family-friendly event. The children are welcome. Just the same as the you know, if you're in a chair or if you're, you know, have whatever your issues are, you're welcome to come here.
Mm-hmm. And again, there's all kinds of materials that are available. People are very open. There's a lot of conversation. There are accesses to information about whatever you want to explore further. So the Emerald Spiral Expo, I'm going to be there. Susan's going to be there. And if you're in Western Washington, won't you come along? Make it a day. It's supposed to be a drippy one, so why not come in where it's warm and cozy and just have a good time? It's a family affair. It is a delight to be a part of it. Susan, it's been wonderful having you as a guest. I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. And those that are listening that are in Western Washington, we'll see you there too. It's at the Kent Commons, and you can go to EmeraldSpiralExpo.com and find out more information. If you parking is free, admission is free, come on down. It's a fun way to spend a day, especially when it's dripping and gray outside. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you, Susan, for being my guest today. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I am going to say to those of you listening from Alaska, I am going to be in Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska. I'm going to be going up into the far north in the middle of October, and I'll be giving you more information about that. Well, I promised you a story about the Pedro Mountain Mummy. Now, this occurred in 1932 in mountains in Wyoming. And this was the month of October. The mountains were called the San Pedro Mountains. And there were two prospectors that were searching for gold. So what else is new? That's really big stuff. The mountains in the United States, so many of them have hidden treasures that people are always trying to find them. Well, they, in their mining process, they discover this rocky ravine wall. And what they find with this wall is amazing. Set up a step of historical discovery. What was it? Well, these two men, Cecil Main and Frank Carr, when they dynamited this wall, after the dust settled, they found there was a cave behind the wall. And remember, in the 1930s, people weren't too much into archaeological digs. There was a small group, but they, you know, you had something in front of you, you just thought it was a bunch of rocks, boom, you blow it up. Fortunately, it didn't blow up what was inside the cave that opened up. Now, what they found was a cave that was 4 feet by 4 feet by 15 feet. Inside, and this was a man-made cave, it contained a narrow ledge. Now, on this ledge was sitting this mummy. He was crossed, his legs were crossed, and his arms were resting on his knees. He was sitting upright. It was bronze in color, and of course it was all wrinkled. It was a mummy. Now, the body looked like it had sort of a barrel shape to it. And it sat 7 inches high, and it extended to 14 inches when they stood the mummy up. Oh, yes, these well-educated guys took this thing up and, oh, let's see what it does. Stands up. Now, this is how they described it. The face had a broad, thin mouth. It was an adult because the teeth inside the mouth were adult teeth. However, it had sharp, vampire-like canines. Hair raising on the back of your neck a little bit. The figure had a flat nose, protruding eyes. It had a low forehead. There was a fringe of hair at the temples. The figure had extremely large hands and very long fingers. This mummy weighed all of 12 ounces. That's not very much. Who knows how long it had been sitting there? I don't know that they ever figured it out. They gave him the name of Pedro. Now, Pedro was exhibited in sideshows for a lot of years, Barnum and Bailey style, yep. And he eventually was purchased by a businessman whose name was Ivan Goodman. And he took the mummy to New York. He wanted to have the mummy examined.
Now, this is what they found out. Now, this was done at the American Museum of Natural History. They found that this was an adult, the mummy was an adult of approximately 65 years of age. And in the research that they had accumulated at that time in the 1930s, there had been a miniature people in the Shoshone legends that had been talked about for generations. Now, these miniature people apparently were very, very aggressive. They were very warlike, and they had attacked the Shoshone people with poisoned arrows, and they would decapitate or crush the skulls of sick people within their own tribe. Now, this is all legend. This is all story that had been passed down. The x-ray showed that Pedro, the mummy, somebody didn't like him because he had died a very violent death. He had a damaged spine, a broken collarbone, smashed skull, and the head was covered by brain tissue and congealed blood. Now, in 1950, Mr. Goodman died, and Leonard Waldler became the new owner of Pedro. And after he became the new owner, somebody stole the mummy. And to this day, they don't know where it is. I bet you some of you said, I think it's an E.T. No, it was a race of little people. A race of little people physically. Lots of fascinating stories that go around about peoples on this planet. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Condor Song. Now, this is a novel, but it is set in California, and of course we all know that the condors in California have come very close to being extinct, and that's because of hunting and removal of habitat. Well, the condor is surviving due to the due diligence of many dedicated people, and this is a story that relates to facts dealing with the environment of the condor and also a mystery and a murder. Yes, don't you just love those things? I am one of these people. I enjoy mystery shows and things like this. Murder, She Wrote was one of my favorites. Was it one of yours? Well, speaking of shows, I just quickly want to give you a few points of information about reality TV shows. This was fun to me when I came across these details because I, on a trip to New York, this was about 2 years ago, I encountered a gentleman when I was waiting for a plane flight who was telling me how in being involved in producing reality shows, and he assisted on a number of them, he said, boy, the people who get into these are sometimes some of the strangest people on the planet. And he talked about how things were organized and how they edited and what they did and how a lot of the reality shows are not unlike your professional wrestling. There is a choreography that goes into place prior to it being viewed by the public. And I really found it fascinating because there's a Michelle Crouch who decided to give an inside view of what really goes on. And one of the things that they do, they said the really big reality shows do an extensive background check on all prospective stars. They call friends and family members. They conduct drug and STD tests. They make sure you sit through endless interviews. And they do psychological and physical examinations dependent on the show. And not all reality shows are the same, and some are heavily staged. And this is what she said. On House Hunters, some of the houses toured on camera were reportedly friends' homes that weren't even on the market. And for day-in-the-life shows about different occupations, many producers fake scenarios like a tree falling on a logger to add drama. Well, yes, I know that's not what we always want to hear. And this is what she said, that she once had a woman cast as a villain who turned out to be the nicest person she had ever met. She said, the nicest lady, those are her exact words. She said, as a producer, I sat her down and said, listen, if you were cast in this role, if you want to make good TV, if you want the series to come back and make more money next year, then you need to play along. If you don't, you're going to be cut out entirely. It worked. So the woman that was cast as a villain, she's not a villain. She's really a very lovely person. But she knew how to give it her all.
She wasn't a professional actress, but she faked it until she made it. And it was a winning situation for her. And also, they said the on-camera interviews are specially produced. You can nudge a cast member to think a certain way or tell them something that will change their tune. And they say the quickest way to figure out what kind of a budget these reality shows have is location. If they're shooting outside in parks and on the street, they pretty much have no budget. To save money, she said she shot stuff in her own home. Ah, yes. The illusion of, what do I want to say, Hollywood? Or wherever. The magic of computers and being able to create something out of nothing can create magic. And that's what show business so often is all about. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is your life. Create your own stage. Don't look at the reality shows and say, gee, I wish. Why not make your life the way you want it to be? Look at your script. Look at how you want to pace it, what you want to do, and how much you want to invest in yourself. This can have a tremendous effect on you as a person. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be with you tomorrow. Take care. God bless. Have a magnificent day.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.